This is Local Matters with Johnny Manson on 94.7 Timber Country.
All righty, it's 9 minutes after 8, and we have a high wind warning until 11 tonight, high surf advisory from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. tomorrow. Our guest this hour, Senator John Brown, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I wanted to talk to you about this legislation passed recently that focuses more attention and resources on the safety of our indigenous brothers and sisters. Can you talk more about that?
You bet. So, and I think this plays broadly into the Republican effort to improve some of our public safety efforts. But in this case, we're in agreement. Both these bills passed unanimously, House Bill 1571 from Representative Mossbrucker and 1725 from Representative Lenikoff. They both deal with how do we help find missing indigenous people around the state and best utilize both public resources and law enforcement resources. And then in the sad case where we find, folks who have passed away or have been subject to some sort of violence, so they make sure we have complete cooperation with our tribal neighbors and with law enforcement across the state to make sure we get the information back to the tribes and work with law enforcement both locally and through the tribes to make sure families know what happened and we get to the bottom of things and try and solve these problems.
So I understand that this law will create an alert effort in this situation, kind of like an Amber Alert. Do you know more about that?
Yeah, that's right. And that's the Bill 1725. And what it does is it tasks the Washington State Patrol to establish a missing indigenous person alert designation. So that's kind of like what the Amber Alert. And it's part of their endangered missing person advisory plan. So we have, and I think most people are familiar with the Amber Alerts. They may be familiar with the Silver Alerts. And this would allow another section under that system to get the word out that we have a missing indigenous person, both locally and around the state, so we can get after this problem. This is a very serious issue in our state and, frankly, around the country, particularly with indigenous women. We have a ongoing problem. It really deserves our full attention to make sure we're getting after this. We're doing our best to try to stop this and locate these folks and get them back to their families and their communities.
You know, it always kind of agitated me when the press would, smother headlines in our state of, someone missing in California when I don't, I feel bad for the family and the missing person in California, but I want to know about the missing people in my state so I can possibly help. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. We I think in our society sometimes the big headlines cover the news, but we have there's a lot of great things happening in our state, but there are also some bad things, and we should be aware of those and work hard to correct them. I think this is a step in the right direction and addresses a problem that is occurring right here in our own midst, and I don't think everybody fully appreciates the serious nature of it.
And it kind of goes along with the whole public safety thing. What's your take on public safety, how we've handled that recently?
Yeah, so that's a big issue in our state. We see crime at all levels from violent crime. The homicide rate in King County is on its way to breaking the record set last year, to property crime. We've seen a lot of property theft, catalytic converters. This is a big problem in our state and driven, in my view at least, by some of the bills that were passed by the majorities last year in 2021. I refer to them as anti-police bills. Others would call them reform bills. But whatever you call them, they clearly went too far in taking away the tools, the tactics, and the ability for law enforcement officers to get involved and keep our community safe, our families safe, and we need to work to correct them. And I would tell you we've made some progress during this session in fixing a few of the issues, but we didn't get everything. As an example, we did correct the ability for law enforcement to work with mental health and behavioral health services to make sure both, you know, someone who's having behavioral health issues and the folks delivering the services are kept safe and free from harm. And the laws passed in 2021 actually prevented that unless a crime was clearly in place, and that resulted in, frankly, more harm, not less harm. So we made some progress, but we haven't fixed it all. So we have a lot of work to do, and frankly, we shouldn't be waiting. We should be doing it right now. It's disappointing some of the things that did not get through the legislature during this last session.
So talking about property crime, 12 of the 50 worst cities in our country are here in Washington. Let's see, Bothell, Des Moines, Lakewood, Yakima, Richland, Edmonds, Shoreline, Puyallup, Burien, SeaTac, University Place, and rolling in at number 3 in the country, Bellingham, Washington, when it comes to this.
I hadn't heard that statistic, at least not in that form, but I am not surprised. You know, here's the thing folks have to understand. Even before the pandemic, before the events of the summer of 2020, in this effort to, quote, reform police activities, Washington already had the lowest number of police officers per capita in the country. Actually, ends up 51 of 50 because Washington, D.C. actually beats us, too. And it's not close, really. When you look at the average, we're well below the average. So we already had a very small police force, law enforcement force, both, you know, state and county and city, tribal, than anybody else in the country. And then we came in 2021, in the session of 2021, and we severely restricted their ability to take action when they see crime happen in our state. That's anywhere from the use of force, and I understand, I'm in no way opposed to some reasonable reform, law enforcement reform, but we need to give them the tools to deal with this. And the one that in particular is a problem, and it will continue to be a problem, is allowing law enforcement officers to pursue when there is a crime has been committed. Right now, they've changed the standard from reasonable suspicion to probable cause. So what that does is that puts that law enforcement officer on the spot, having to make a decision in seconds. Is there only reasonable suspicion, or is there probable cause that a crime was committed, and can they pursue? So in most cases, law enforcement agencies around the state have looked at this and said, you can't pursue. And guess what? Criminals understand this. They understand if they commit a crime and they simply walk away or drive away, the police are not allowed, not permitted by law to chase them. So you know what that leads to? People they're just empowered to go commit more crime. So it should be no surprise to anybody that we start with the lowest law enforcement numbers in the country, and of course we could talk separately about what those numbers have done during the pandemic and the causes of that, and then we make the law so police can't pursue. Of course we're going to see crime explode. That should be no surprise to anyone.
Right, right. And those responsible don't seem to want to, chime up and say, oops, we screwed up. We throw in buzzwords like pivot and things, you know? It is 17 minutes after 8. If you have any questions for the senator, you can email us or text message johnny@jodesha.com. All right, it's 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. We have a high wind warning until 11 p.m. tonight. High surf advisory from 11 a.m. this morning until 5 p.m. tomorrow. We have Senator John Brown on the phone with us talking about some of the bills recently passed, some of the battles fought. Tell me about this pursuit bill.
Well, the bill that was passed in 2021 basically, as I said earlier, changed the standard from reasonable suspicion to probable cause. And that doesn't sound like much to us law enforcement folks, but what that means is that it basically makes it virtually impossible for officers at the scene of a crime to make a decision based on the law to pursue folks. And what that means is criminals can simply walk or drive away. And there was a concerted effort in this last session, 2022, to fix this issue. This was an issue identified early by the Republicans in both the Senate and the House. A fix was proposed in several different bills. Ultimately, the Senate bill, 5919, passed out of the Senate with a substantial majority, mostly Republicans, but some Democrats, some moderate Democrats joined, and then went to the House. It got modified a little bit there to kind of tame it, you know, it was a little bit weaker. But still, if you talk to law enforcement members around the state, they would say it's still valuable, still helps us make sure we can pursue. And it just provides some guidelines. It changed to reasonable suspicion, but also made sure that we aren't entering into a pursuit where the pursuit might be more dangerous than the crime itself. And that just makes sense. But it didn't prevent officers from pursuing. The bottom line is, ultimately, it got passed back out of the House. And the way that works is it passed out of the Senate, the House makes some changes, and they pass it out. Then it comes back to the Senate for what's known as concurrence. And all that is a simple, it's about a five-minute procedure where the Senate would concur with the changes made in the House, and we'd have the final vote. It takes, like I said, 5 minutes. And what we saw is it came back about a week before the end of session, and the Senate Democratic majority just kept delaying the vote. And pretty soon, by the last couple of days, it became obvious to us their intention was to not pass. And what was happening is the very far-left members of the Senate Democratic Caucus were basically trying to hold up the vote. And so you're talking about probably a quarter, maybe a third of the Senate members saying, no, we won't let it come to a vote. We actually made three procedural motions on the last day to make it come up for a vote, and all three times the Senate majority, the Democrats, voted down. They wouldn't even consider the bill. And this, just to make sure, be clear, this fixes a real problem that's causing a huge burst in crime around our state. It had passed out of the Senate already. It had passed out of the House already. They stopped it simply on a procedural because they couldn't bear to see this problem get fixed, is how I see it.
It seems to me, from my observations, that the people who create the problem do so they can propose the solution, but then they don't take responsibility for the problem that they caused. At least that's my take.
Yeah, I think it's almost as if they're indifferent to the harm being done by criminals around our state. And don't get me wrong, I believe in redemption. I believe people can be rehabilitated. Absolutely. But I also believe we have to protect the law-abiding citizens of our state. And you do that through by enforcing the laws, by making sure folks who break the law, there are consequences for breaking the law. You can't just hope it's all going to work out and think it will. And that kind of, and this is, frankly, part of a bigger problem in our state that we really haven't seen yet entirely. And I talked earlier about the low number of police officers in our state. The other big issue that is just going to grow is what's called the graduated reentry program. And this was a program that was piloted back, I think, in 2018 in a bipartisan way. The idea is that for some folks who are put in prison based on the situation, we think with proper supervision, they can reenter civil society and build productive lives. That's good for them. It's good for all of us. The Democrats propose to expand that massively. So we are faced with a situation in our state where thousands of people are going to be let out of our prisons early. And ultimately, nobody who, if it's not a violent crime, they won't serve more than 2 or 3 months, even if they've been previously committed for violent crime, and they'll be put back into our communities around the state. And here's the real problem. We haven't built the supervision structure to make sure they are set up for success, so that we're not only putting them back on the street and setting them up for failure, we're putting our communities at risk by releasing literally thousands of folks early. It's sort of unbelievable. And I'd be candid with you, the Democratic majorities don't even want to stop there. There's other bills that would allow for early release of even very violent prisoners.
Well, I hear the governor and the lieutenant governor are both on vacation this week. I would think that since they're both going on vacation, there's no emergency, and as such, no reason for the governor to have emergency powers. But I just thought that was kind of odd. So the graduated reentry, is that a bill?
And that was a bill that was passed last year, 2021. I apologize, the number is escaping me.
It's all right.
But yeah, it's being put into place as we as we speak. I mean, people, they're setting up to and are releasing prisoners as we speak, and lay that over top of these terrible anti-police bills that were passed in 2021, our low number of law enforcement officers, our failure to correct some of these bills this year. We're kind of setting up a perfect storm. And you made the comment earlier, the folks that are proposing this sort of seem indifferent to the crime and the harm it's creating in our communities. And we saw, of course, last week we saw the memorial for a police officer killed in Tacoma, and the very same day we had a police officer shot and killed and then run over in Everett. It's just lawlessness. It's absolutely unbelievable that they're not focused on fixing this problem. In fact, I'll give you two examples where that highlight that the majority's mindset is completely on the wrong side. A bill that passed out of the Senate, it ultimately died in the House, thankfully, but it would allow would change the commutations and parole board in our state, and basically presumed that anybody in a certain time would be eligible. Presumed they would be eligible for parole unless someone could prove that they were with a preponderance of the evidence that they would be violent. That means, you know, immediately over 800 very violent criminals would be immediately eligible for parole and presumed that they would get parole unless you could prove otherwise. It's just unbelievable. These are very violent, you know, criminals, and we're going to try. We're just going to suggest we presume that they're going to be safe and let them out. That is unbelievable. It's thankful it died in the House. And then there's another one. I think it's 1166, where it significantly reduced the penalties specifically for gun and sexual related crimes. It reduced the penalties for these crimes at the same time we're having a record spike in these very crimes. It's like this cognitive dissonance that they're not connecting to the things that are happening in our communities around the state. The level of unsafety. Go back to your comment about 12 of the 50 worst cities in the country or in our state. It's like they don't recognize the type of problem, the scale of the problem that we have here in Washington.
Boy, you said a lot right there. I guess, you know, with the leniencies on sex crimes goes along with the recent Supreme Court nominee. So is there a way for someone to look, like, online at, you know, who voted for a bill, who voted against something? Do we know of any kind of resources like that?
Yeah, so it depends on your, the amount of time you have and how much research you want to do, but certainly everything I'm talking about is well documented online. You go to the ledge.wa.gov and you can search, you know, based on, you know, where you are, you know, who you're represented by, what kind of bills they proposed, what kind of bills they voted for, and it gets and there's a lot of detail there. You also, if you want to, you know, narrow in, you can go to, you know, look at some of the summaries that are posted up there by the Senate Republicans, also the House Republicans, that focus on what we've gotten wrong, and we being brought into the legislature, the Republicans have opposed when it comes to law enforcement, the types of fixes that we have proposed to get after those problems, and then the results, what's happened to those. And you'll see, you know, in many cases, in most cases, the current majority is resisting even having a hearing on some of these bills, let alone passing them out of committee and ultimately off the floor. So we're making tiny bits of you know, improvement, but not the level of improvement we need to keep our community. So I know that's a broad answer to your question, but it takes quite a bit of research. But we have lots of folks in Columbia that can help find the answer you're looking for.
Well, I think it's our civic duties to put as much time and research into this as possible.
94.7 Timber Country. It's local matters. Here's Johnny Manson.
All righty then. We have Senator Brown on the phone with us this morning. We've been talking about the session and some laws and priorities. And thanks for, you know, taking time to talk with me today. So, what are our priorities for this upcoming session? What were our priorities last session, even?
Yeah. So I think broadly, at least for the Senate Republicans, we're focused on public safety, and we've talked quite a bit about that. We're focused on affordability and getting after the issue, of inflation, and we're focused on rebuilding public trust after 2 years of a pandemic. And in particular, when it comes to affordability, I really feel like the majority in the state Senate and the state House. Missed the mark. I mean, we have this huge problem in our country, in particular in our state, the 40-year high in inflation, almost 8%, and Washington regularly running anywhere from 2 to 3 to 5 points higher in inflation. This is really a big problem for folks around the state, in particular, middle-class folks, working-class folks, people that were already having trouble paying for their groceries and paying for their rent. With 8% inflation, they're just not making it. We're making Washington unaffordable. And this is the direct result of policies put in place over time by the Democratic majority. So whether it's food or gas or housing or the heat for your house, everything is becoming prohibitively expensive, particularly for folks in the middle who are just trying to make it.
So I noticed we had a surplus, but no tax relief.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Huge missed opportunity for our state. And just put this in perspective, we have a $60 billion, that's billion-dollar biennial budget. So the state spends $60 billion under the current budget every 2 years. And this is a budget that's very robust. It's grown by almost doubled in the last 10 years. It's grown at double the rate of personal income. So it's a very, we could talk about specifics about why it's so robust, and there's no budget that's perfect, but this is a very strong budget, and we had a $15 billion surplus, and that's again, $15 billion, unheard of, 10 times higher than any previous surplus ever seen in the state of Washington, a huge opportunity to send significant tax relief back to the people of the state of Washington, and we could have done it any number of ways. The Republicans proposed property tax reduction, getting rid of the capital gains income tax, getting rid of the long-term care payroll tax. We proposed a reduction in the gas tax for a year. But we weren't parochial about it. We supported any tax reduction. A Democrat proposed a sales tax reduction. We gave that bill a lot of love. And the bottom line is the Democratic majorities in both the House and the Senate refuse to allow any meaningful tax reduction to happen. None. So we have this gigantic surplus, and none of it you simply can't afford to send any of that back to the people of the state of Washington. And they'll say, "Well, we just aren't sure what the future holds." But yet they spent most of that money on other things that have go on forever and ever. So it's all just continued evidence that they don't trust average citizen to spend their money wisely, that they think they can spend it better. And even with enormous, and I really mean enormous, surpluses, they couldn't afford to send any back to the people of the state of Washington. Really disappointing.
Well, I see that 18 and under get free ridership for ferries, trains, and public transportation. That's good, right?
Maybe. And that's part of the transportation package. I'm glad you brought that up. That's another gigantic mispriority. So even if we hadn't, we just couldn't bring ourselves to do big tax reduction for the people of the state of Washington, which we should have, we could have at least used some of that surplus to fund our transportation system in an ongoing way, really change the way we do transportation. They did pass a transportation bill, and I'm certainly not opposed to investing in our transportation system. A lot of good things there. But the way they funded it was, once again, a one-time deal, and it relied on fees, and about two dozen fees on things like getting a new license, driver's license, or getting new plates for your car that went up by 300%, 400%, 500%. And it relied on one-time money instead of setting up a system which we could easily afford to send a certain amount of money from the operating budget into the transportation budget and get us out of this three-decade addiction, to the gas tax and to bonding the gas tax. We really could have changed our transportation both now and decades into the future by thinking more broadly. Huge missed opportunity. And then the other thing, other part of that, and this is, we could talk, you know, for another hour about transportation, but they did it in a partisan manner. First time in anybody's memory that transportation wasn't done in a bipartisan manner. And what you saw as a result is all the investment were in districts represented by Democrats, and the rest of the state left out. And that's disappointing, whether you're in Grays Harbor or over here where I live in Lewis County, that we didn't get any help to fix our failing interchanges or our access roads or our bridges. Really disappointing and not the right thing for the state long term.
Well, hey, we get to ban gas cars here soon, so I guess the more we tax gas, the more we'll be privy to getting an electric car, and you know, all rainbows and unicorns.
Right, it's hidden in the bill. It was a ban in 2030 of all gas or internal combustion driven vehicles. It's wholly unrealistic. First of all, I'm not sure if money was an object. I'm not sure you can logistically do that, but money is an object. Most of us can't afford to go out and buy a new Tesla. We're going to buy the car we can afford, and frankly, the electric car we can afford isn't available. And then, of course, there's the issue of how do we get all that electricity if we were to do that? I mean, they're thinking in unicorns instead of in reality, and this is the type of things happen in a transportation budget when you do it in a partisan manner. You get all kinds of, you know, partisan, you know, Democratic wish lists and goals in there that really aren't achievable. There's no practical way to get there. It's disappointing.
You know, it used to be, and, you know, maybe I'm wrong because, you know, I'm not all that versed in the system, but it seemed to me that there used to be some give and take, some, you know, just some negotiation, like, okay, well, we don't necessarily like that, but we'll meet you halfway. And it doesn't seem like there's much of that anymore.
That's right. I mean, we are desperately in need of more balance in Olympia. And I don't think, I don't go to Olympia expecting to get everything I want or everything my constituents want, but I expect to get the opportunity to fight for what they want, what they believe in, and have a chance of getting something that's balanced, that's moderate, that really serves all of the state of Washington, isn't directed, you know, in a very partisan way to help urban Washington and not help rural Washington. And I don't like making that divide. I think we ought to be looking for solutions that help all of us. But that's not what we're getting right now, where there's no balance. There's no give and take in Olympia right now. It's pretty much one party running things and doing it in a very, very partisan way, really driven by the left, hard left-leaning parts of their caucus. And it's bad for the state of Washington. And we'll see what happens this year. Of course, we're in election season. I can't talk about elections, but I think the people of the state of Washington are going to get tired of it. They expect solutions to serve us all, not just some people.
I wanted to ask your personal opinion on, you know, this whole inflation and gas prices. I mean, I had noticed gas prices starting to go up on Inauguration Day. But some people say, oh, well, this has nothing to do with it. It has to do with this. What's your opinion on this?
Well, I think there's multiple issues. I think, you know, when they went up on Election Day, that was anticipating some of the things that President Biden did right away, with things like, you know, shut down the Keystone Pipeline and restrict access to oil production and refinement in our country. And so some of it's anticipating those changes, and of course, all that anticipated changes have sort of come to pass, and we've had a real hard effect on prices. And it's not just gas. I mean, it goes from food. You know, the current majorities of, you know, it's been a multi-year attack on our agricultural sector that's driving up prices. Of course, gas drives up prices for food. It's on housing. You know, we pass bill after bill. We, being the current majority, pass bill after bill aimed at making it more expensive, and maybe not purposely aimed, but indifferent that it does drive up the cost of housing, and naturally, if we don't have enough housing, prices go up. We are currently, by reasonable estimates, 250,000 houses behind where we need to be in our state. And it's simply a restriction of the market. When there's fewer of something, especially something so important as where people live, the prices go up, and it's making it unaffordable for people. And it's true whether you're buying or renting. All these prices are going up, and it's layering on one after another additional cost, whether it's regulatory and the cost that goes with that, or it's different materials and the cost that goes with that. We're just making it more and more expensive and not allowing any chance for developers and home builders to get caught up and for people to afford it.
So these emergency powers, it seemed like that went nowhere.
Yeah, that's accurate. We're 2 years into an emergency, and we, being the Republicans, have been saying, since early on, we're not saying there shouldn't be emergency powers. Absolutely, that we need ability to respond quickly in a real emergency, whether it's a pandemic or an earthquake or a tsunami. We need to be able to act quickly. But in long-term emergencies like the one we're in, there is no reason to exclude the legislature long-term. That the orders the governor puts out can't be reviewed by the legislature. It's absolutely doable and should be done. So we've been advocating for this for a couple years. Finally, about mid-session this year, the Democrats seem to finally figure out that people are getting frustrated by this, and they proposed a bill. Unfortunately, that bill didn't do much. It didn't actually force the legislature to be involved. It allowed them to be involved, but it didn't make us do our job. And, people out there are frustrated with the governor, and there's lots of reasons to be frustrated with the governor, trust me. But on the emergency powers, I really believe the people they ought to be frustrated with is the legislature. The legislature has allowed this to happen for 2 years, and by that I mean the legislative majorities. They're simply fine to sit and let the governor make all these decisions, and they can watch. And that's not the way our founding fathers envisioned our state. And I get, as I said earlier, I believe we need emergency power statutes. But once you get into a longer term emergency, you got to involve the legislature. You have to make sure people understand that they are being represented in Olympia by the people they elected. And when they aren't, they begin to lose trust in government, and that's a bad thing for all of us. Doesn't matter what your politics are, that's a bad thing.
How can we fix that trust in government? Is it fixable?
I think so, but we have to take on the legislature, frankly, just needs to be more assertive. And the bills that we suggested would basically say, if the governor, creates an order, say you have to wear a mask, and I'm not picking on masks. I don't have a problem with wearing a mask if it's necessary, but pick your order. That's good for 30, you could say it's 60, 90 days. I don't know that the time frame matters a lot, as long as it's in that range. After that point, the legislature has to approve for that order to continue. And there's different ways you could do that, but you make sure the legislature in these extended emergencies are by default involved in the decision, that people can see where their elected representatives and state senators are voting, and then they can make the choice. That's how our system works, is they get to see, they elect somebody to represent them, they see how they represent them, and then they can decide whether to rehire them at the end of their term or not. That's how this is supposed to work, and we have fundamentally short-circuited that by saying, okay, legislature doesn't have to vote on all these really important directives the governor is putting out. We need to change the law so the legislature does have to vote on those after a period of time. And that doesn't take away from the governor's ability to respond quickly to emergencies. What it means is if these emergencies go on for a period of time, the legislature is by default involved. We need to pass that bill, or bill like that. And we're happy to work on that. But what the Democratic majority have insisted on is kind of window dressing for emergency powers reform that says, well, if we feel like it, we can do something. But here's the truth. If they felt like it, they could do something today, they don't need a new law to do that. They've simply been happy to stand on the sidelines, and we shouldn't allow that to happen. It shouldn't be the way it works.
It's 8:49. We got one more segment with Senator Brown. If you have any questions, you can email or text message us at johnny@jodesha.com. All right, it's 10 minutes before 9, and we have Senator John Brown on the phone with us. Boy, we've talked a lot about some of the key issues going on in our state that kind of have a trickle-down effect to us here locally. Are you still on there on the phone with us, sir?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Hey, I had a text come in. I understand that indigenous are murdered higher than any other race, but why should we do a separate system for them? Shouldn't the system be equal for everyone? Doesn't every victim deserve as much effort? This seems to be more race separation tactics. What say you?
I think that's a great question. And two things. One, yes, they are murdered or missing at a higher rate. But what this does, I don't think this is creating a separation. There hasn't been the same level of coordination and effort spent on dealing with missing indigenous persons as on other folks. So I view this more as leveling the playing field, making sure everyone, including our tribal neighbors, are getting the same amount of attention. And I agree, we do not want to separate ourselves by race or other means. Everybody deserves attention, and certainly people put in terrible situations like this deserve all the attention we can muster. But this is really what I think is balancing the scale, making sure we're not leaving anybody behind when it comes to this.
Right. Maybe the press won't tell us about, you know, these California people missing when we have our own here in Washington State that we need to help find, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Okay. What the Washington Long-Term Care Act or the Washington CARES Act has been delayed. What do you see being a senator and how the process works? It's my understanding there's sometimes, you know, wheeling and dealing and sometimes no dealing at all. But what's your take on the Washington CARES Act and the delay?
Well, I mean, I'm happy that it was delayed. I don't think that was the right answer. It needed to be just eliminated, and we need to start over and just get this right. I mean, I think that we all need to be thinking about how we plan for and ultimately pay for care as we age. There's no question about this, but this is the wrong solution to the problem. And instead of recognizing that, what the Democratic majority said is we're just going to delay it. Really, they're just delaying it until we get through the election, and then they're going to come back and you know, quote, fix it. Well, I can tell you, at the same time they delayed it, they put into place some fixes that will double the cost of this payroll tax already, and they haven't even fixed the biggest problem, which is portability, meaning if you pay into the system for 30 or 40 years here in Washington and you decide to move somewhere else because your kids are somewhere else or because it's warmer or for any number of reasons, you lose that benefit, and that's going to cost even more money. So delay was just the wrong answer. We should have eliminated it and started over. And what I worry about is it got delayed, and you know, people are getting on with living their lives. They got a lot of things going on, so they're not thinking about it, and it won't be top of mind until we get, you know, it comes back to life a year from now, and all of a sudden it's in place again, and they haven't focused on the fix. We need to really start over on this program and find a better way to do it. And we had a really good proposal made by Representative Stokesbury in the House that envisioned a private solution, a private market solution to this, with some reinsurance from the state, but one that would be affordable for people, that could be actually provide a better benefit, could be portable so you could take it with you. It fixed all the fundamental problems with this and didn't rely on a new state agency or an expanded state agency to do it, which we know historically generally doesn't work all that well.
I got to expand that bureaucracy. But, hey, I've noticed common sense isn't allowed around here. You know, the same people creating the problems, they say that they have the solution. But I digress. Education, yeah. Senator, where's education going? That's been a big, big one.
Well, this is another area where I think the public has lost trust in our education system. We have 50,000 fewer students in our public education system than we did 2 years ago. These are students that, by and large, still in Washington, but they're either homeschooled or they're in private schools because people have lost faith in the public education system. And thankfully, we made it worse in this session. If you look at the actual budget, the funding for public education in a real sense went down. It's an Olympia cut where it just didn't go up. It actually went down as a percentage of our budget. It went down at the same time. The majority's passed a bill that would fund these ghost students, that haven't shown up for class for another year, which means the school districts don't have to respond. And frankly, it's unfair because some school districts, many school districts in my area and your area, they don't have fewer students because they did a good job during the pandemic. They still have the same number of students. So they see these large districts up in the central Puget Sound being rewarded for doing a bad job while they just still have to make it on what they, on the same funding. And the other thing it did is it drove up the levy rates, allowed for the levy rates to be higher based on these what I call ghost students, students that are no longer showing up. So we got it wrong in every area in terms of responding, including the one thing I did is a response to learning loss. We had kids that were out of school, in-person schooling for a year, sometimes more. Enormous learning loss. And these are the kids, the ones most directly impacted are the kids that were already struggling, either academically or financially or emotionally, socially. They really had a hard time and an enormous learning loss. And we did virtually nothing to help school districts respond to that. Now, I believe school districts individually are doing their best to try to respond. But the state level, I don't think we did anything meaningful to help them.
Oh, wow. Plausible deniability. Is that what that is? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I was wrong once. We got a couple more minutes left here with the senator. If you have any questions, you can email or text us here at johnny@jodesha.com. So what would you advise a citizen of Grays Harbor and Pacific County to do to try to combat this insanity?
Well, I think you are, I would say, first of all, you're well represented over there by folks who are fighting on the exact issues that I talked about over the last, really, an hour. We're fighting for improving public safety around our state. We're fighting for making it affordable to live in our state everywhere and at all levels of the economy. And we're fighting to rebuild trust in state and local government. And so I think you got a good team there doing it. The challenge is they need a bigger team that are fighting on this issue. So continue to support, continue to be involved is always the best thing citizens can do at every level and every place. And really listen, understand what the challenges are. Don't react to the immediate rumor. Really understand. You asked earlier about, how they do that. Go to leg.wa.gov and take some time to understand what's happening in your state at the legislative level. And I think anytime folks get involved and they talk to their legislators, it's always a good thing. It builds better understanding, frankly, builds better trust, and helps us do a better job.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time. We have about 20 seconds left. And thanks again for spending an hour with us just talking, about the process and your take on what's going on in Olympia.
You bet. Thanks for having me. Long, enjoyable conversation. We covered a lot of topics.
All right. You have a great week, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.